Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
The Tornado, Tony Pennycow.
And we finally figured out the glitch here with Blog Talk Radio not letting me in on another number around the system here. I don't know what's going on there. Tom was on there for a second. Second Tom. Sure he'll be back once we reload it. Got a lot to talk about this week. Big news, wrestling news this week, Tony. I just turned on Tough Enough the other night, last week, and I'm like, oh, Hulk Hogan's back with the WWE. And 2 nights later, what do I read? Oh, Hulk Hogan's out of the WWE.
You know what? Okay, the guy did something like 10 years ago, and now they're punishing him for it. Now, I know it got released now, and I'm sure there's a lot. I think they did it more for like a lot of like backlash, you know. And I'm sure within like 6 months to a year, they'll kind of just, okay, we gave him his punishment. Now let's bring him back. But like part of what I was like reading was like, oh, they're like taking his stuff off like the network and everything. Well, I'm so, that's kind of hard when the guy main evented your first 8 WrestleManias.
Yeah. Well, Psychic Tom, that's Psychic Tom told us Hulk Hogan was a racist last week, right, Tom?
What was that? Didn't hear you.
You told us Hulk Hogan was a racist last week because you're a psychic, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, what a story, huh?
Yeah. See, here's what I don't believe. I don't believe Hulk Hogan is a racist. He teamed up with the Junkyard Dog a couple times.
I don't know. You know, obviously his Hulkamaniacs are disappointed, but yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, that's why you have lawsuits. He's suing this guy that put this video out, and it's obviously
damage is done.
You know, when you're sleeping with some other guy's wife in that situation, yeah, there's probably some drugs involved, probably some bad decisions being made. You know, so somebody whips out a video camera and then tries to sell it. You know, what is it, 10 years later? It's kind of questionable whether, you know, you can take everything that he says at face value. But I don't get it either, why it's just all of a sudden now. I thought they knew all the stuff that was on this tape already. I don't know how it just all of a sudden came out now. I remember like 2 years ago, Hulk Hogan being on Don Imus talking about this shit. So you knew Bubba the Love Sponge was out there. A fucked up name too involved with this. Anyway, we got so much event news to talk about, upcoming events. We're trying to actually get Brandon Bennett on the show. Still in progress here with guy in Tony's neck of the woods, Mark Abrams, working on it for us for 9:15. So he's got an hour left. We'll see if he comes through. I'm sure we'll get him before his event is actually Friday, August 28th. So I'm trying for you, Tony.
All right.
He's actually 19-1 with 8 knockouts, facing a guy named Jonathan Macello. Like, he's been around. He's been putting stuff out about. He's 21-2 with 12 knockouts. And it's at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. We got Kovalev to talk about. He had a big, nice win over the weekend. You know what impressed me the most, though? A guy that is probably not an easy name for anybody to pronounce, but Bebuch.
Shumanov?
Did you see Bebuch?
I did not.
Shumanov shuffled off the old style there that I hated. And he was actually had an announcer saying that he took a page out of Bernard Hopkins' book, Tony, the guy who beat him. Supposedly he was training himself before he fought Hopkins. I don't buy that. I think he had to have somebody working with him training him. But he moved to a different trainer, and wow, talk about transformation. Unbelievable transformation. BJ Flores was bitching and moaning that he didn't really want to fight. He was running away all the time, but that's the style that won him the fight.
Exactly. So, I mean, yeah, it's kind of It's the same dilemma in MMA with delay and pray. I mean, it's up to you to get the guy off, and it's up to the other guy to cut the ring off. It's that simple.
Exactly. And his corner kept telling him, you know, step to the right, you know, stop him. But Shumanov now, instead of keeping his low hand down by his thigh or up near his waist for him, he kept it sort of stomach to chest level up to his shoulder at times. And just use the pawing jab, Rocky Marciano style, with a little bit less of a crouch, but a lot of pawing jabs going on, and just targeted punches. Very cautious, a lot of movement. Running, yeah, running would be a good way to characterize it, but smart running. Got away from everything BJ Flores was trying to throw at him, and BJ was just going for the knockout. I mean, you could tell that from bell one. It's like, you know, we just wanted to get this guy out of there. And Beirut said, no, I'm a different guy now than you've been watching on tape. just sparked everything up for BJ and said, sorry, buddy. Beirut.
Now, do you guys think that BJ was aware that this guy had such good movement and just ignored that fact in his training? Or do you think he just couldn't make any adjustments? What do you think?
I think he got to headhunting, and he just said, you know what, I can't chase this guy, you know, it's not worth it. So I'm just going to take one step at a time and see if he walks into my zone. And Beirut was, you know, it was actually very close with the total punches landed, but Beirut just seemed like he was in control more because, you know, Flores was winging punches, and when he did connect, it was kind of like a lucky punch, and he looked frustrated a lot more than Beirut. Beirut, I think maybe two or three times he got caught up against the ropes or in a corner, and then he was like, "Oh fuck, you know, I can't do that again."
Wow,
so,
that's surprising because BJ is one of the smartest fighters IQ wise. I think, you know, he's got a great fight IQ, but wow, I guess he maybe hasn't. He's been a little inactive, or who knows.
Well, maybe he's getting comfortable behind the announce table, too.
Maybe Beirut became Beirut the beautiful.
yeah, maybe
we're watching the fight.
He just totally transformed his game, and a different fighter from Bernard Hopkins' fight, and just used his jab tremendously well. You know, a real lot of quick jabs, sharp quick jabs. And just 1-2s, a lot of 1-2s, basic punches that he's used to. But, you know, this trainer that's working with him basically took a bad habit of his with that way low hand and nothing but 1-2s. And he adjusted a little bit. He made him change levels a lot more, made him use the whole ring, made him move in circles, made him change stances, which I've been saying a lot about on this show. Multiple times, change your stance, orthodox, southpaw, if you can do it, you know, fucks people up sometimes.
If you can do it.
So he was getting away with that, doing that well, and just looked like, he looked like a throwback fighter, you know, one of those guys who really is using every tool to win the fight, and that's very rare at that weight. You don't see that too often at that weight. I mean, Bernard Hopkins is good at it, but, you know, he's a throwback fighter. So, anyway, Kovalev got the job done. Three rounds is all it took him. Less than three rounds, inside of three rounds against Najib Mohammadi.
Yeah, that's about 2.5 rounds longer than I expected.
Wasn't a big surprise there.
Yeah, I guess Sergey was upset about that. He wanted it to go on longer. He thought that the fans deserve more than a quick one like that. He wanted more work.
Right.
Well, when you hit like he does, and, you know, and the guy can't take it, unfortunately,
exactly.
That's going to be the result.
Yeah, you know, no one said he had to hit as hard as he normally does. Yeah, I was watching him train. It's a YouTube video of him hitting the punch mitts, and it was almost like a gunshot. My God, he must hit hard.
And Tom's trying to promote Kovalev versus Gennady Golovkin. Sent me an email about that today.
Yeah, I was reading that myself.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to promote it at all. That's a silly fight, I think. I'd just like to, they're both fascinating, exciting guys, and I'd like to see them make a few other fights. There's an article today on Max Boxing about possibly Triple G moving down to 154 for Mayweather. Of course, Abel Sanchez wrote the article. You know, naturally, it's in his best interest to see that, but
yeah,
no
right.
It's going to happen. You know, and then as far as Ward moving up to 175, I guess I think Sergey was asked about that. He says, you know, maybe he's not quite ready to move up yet. But I mean, talk about a fascinating contrast of styles. I mean, to me, that's an exciting fight because, you know, when you think about it, it would be kind of boring if all we had was two brawlers all the time or two big punchers or two slick boxers. I mean, I just love the style versus style. And I think that's the ultimate treat for us if we can ever get that.
Jean Pascal had a good weekend as well. He beat Unieski Gonzalez for the very first time in Gonzalez.
Well, I don't know. I mean, did he legitimately win that fight? I don't think
good,
so.
On every good card,
good point. Good point.
I mean, and here's what was funny, because we were talking about the BJ Flores Bader Chimanov fight, and you're asking if I saw it. And originally we had been flipping back and forth. And then we settled on the HBO card because we're like, no, we wanted to see the Jean Pascal fight. And after the first round, we're like, oh, this dial's going nowhere.
Whoops.
This dial's going nowhere. What a great fight. And, I mean, those two boys were banging. I mean, they were banging. And I thought Gonzalez won, you know? I mean, he landed some shots. I mean, I thought he had Pascal hurt a couple times. He faded a little bit late, but at the same time, I thought he just did better and more consistent work. And I thought he should have got the decision. And I would love to see a fight between Gonzalez and Kovalev, just with their styles. Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Scotty Ward all over again.
Whoa. We got some big events coming up this weekend, too. I don't know. Do we want to talk about anything from last week that I didn't mention already? I didn't really get a good scheduled listing from Fox Rec. What did I neglect to mention, Tony? Anything?
I don't know. I boycott Fox Rec. I hate it anymore.
Saturday, ESPN 3. You can watch this fight from New Zealand. Jeff Horn versus Viktor Plotnikov at welterweight. Jeff Horn's only 10-0-1, but Plotnikov is 32-2, and this is for a lot of belts. A lot of crazy belts that probably didn't exist 20 years ago. But WBA Pan-African welterweight title, the PABA welterweight title, the WBO Oriental welterweight title, neither guy is Oriental. And the IBF Intercontinental Welterweight title. We also have Joseph Parker. I believe he's a former rugby player or current rugby player. He's at 14-0. He's fighting Bowie Tupu, who's 25-3. That's for the PABA heavyweight title, the WBO Oriental heavyweight title, WBO Africa heavyweight title, and the vacant OPBF heavyweight title. So there, that's in New Zealand. We got a lot of stuff going on Saturday. Danny Garcia versus Pauly Malignaggi in Brooklyn.
And like I said, that was one that we were talking about last week on the show. And as I came out there and said, and I was actually talking to a friend of mine on Saturday who knows Danny Garcia. They were amateurs together. And Danny is not as physical and as, you know, kind of a guy that's going to wear you down, kind of like Sean Porter did. He was just too strong and too physical, and he just kind of, you know, just steamrolled Malignaggi. Malignaggi, you know, he just couldn't keep him off. Danny's not that kind of fighter. Now, he's moving up 7 pounds. You know, he's a growing kid, and I think he was really hurting himself the last, you know, year or two, trying to make the weight, you know, at 140. I just You know, the Herrera fight, he didn't look too good. Rod Sapa was a mismatch, which never should have been made. The Peterson fight, he really faded, and I think that was, you know, he was really, you know, losing a lot of his energy. So I think you're going to see a better Danny Garcia at 147. Now, that being said, just like I said last week, I don't think he is going to be able to steamroll Malignaggi like Sean Porter did. Malignaggi's going to have some chances, especially, you know, if he's able to keep it competitive early, and maybe he can, you know, steal rounds late if Garcia starts to fade. I'm expecting to see this to be a more of a technical fight. I think they're going to try to, you know, kind of like almost like a sword fight, like a fencing matchup early. And I just think Garcia just being a little bit younger and a little bit a harder puncher is what's going to carry him to victory. I just don't think Malignaggi has the punching power. Garcia does have a very good chin. He stood up to Lucas Matisse and, you know, took some bombs from Peterson and Dab Judah. So I think, you know, Malignaggi's not going to be able to hurt him. So Garcia's going to be able to, you know, pretty much attack, you know, without abandon. And I think, you know, it's going to be a technical fight early. And I just think, you know, Garcia, his advantages in power will be what carries the day to a competitive but relatively clear unanimous decision.
Malignaggi by second knockout. That's my prediction. You're going to get his eighth knockout. 34th win. You know, he's kind of dabbling with retirement. I don't know how good his training camp was. Malignaggi's got one tool, and it's a jab. You know, he's got decent right hand, but he breaks his hands a lot in his fights. So it shows you how soft the puncher he is, you know. If you're breaking your hand every time you throw a hard punch, you know, how often are you going to throw hard punches in your fights? And that's been his downfall his last few fights that he's lost. His last win was against, like you said, Zab Judah. Danny Garcia is undefeated. You know, you can't argue with undefeated. But, you know, it could be a Bebu Chumanov situation, you know. We don't know how good Malignaggi's training camp was. We don't know how good that jab is flowing for him and, you know, how good he's looking. Maybe he really, really wants this to be his last hurrah. He goes out and beats a championship caliber guy like Danny Garcia on free TV. You know, shock the world. Seth Petruzzelli. Going to pull Seth Petruzzelli on him. Good Kimbo killer. I don't know. Could happen, you know. It kind of makes me wonder whether, you know, it really is possible for Paulie at this stage. But, you know, Danny Garcia is kind of a good candidate for him to try. Win or lose, you know, he's going to look like a tough bastard for just taking him on. So it's a win-win situation for Paulie, I think. You know, he's only got 6 losses. This would be lucky 7. He loses unlucky 7. So no bad excuses for hanging it up after that. You know, if that's what happens, he gets a real bad beating. But I think he can stay away long enough with his jab that he won't get beat up too bad. But I don't think he can win unless he really pulls it out of his ass. Sorry, Paulie. Even though it's that you're in your hometown of Brooklyn there. It's going to be an uphill battle. But we'll see. Anything's possible. Paulie. What else we got on that card? We got Daniel Jacobs taking on Sergio Mora. No one can steal the show.
Oh, wow. You know what? That'll be an interesting fight. Jacob's been fighting very well since he came back, you know, from the cancer scare. More, it feels like he's been around forever since he won the contender 10 years ago. Mara can be slippery. He can, you know, he's a spoiler. He can make you look bad, but he's had some fights that he just, especially recently, I just don't think he looked that impressive in. And I'm going to have to go with Jacobs on this one. I don't think it'll be a stoppage. But once again, I think it'll be a decision. But I got to go with Jacobs.
Tony don't like the Latin snake on this one. Sergio's
going. I don't like snakes.
I'm not going to win this one. Sorry, Sergio. Nice try. No. That's for the WBA World Middleweight title, by the way. I'm not sure by this BoxRec listing who owns that title, but it's not vacant, so one of these guys owns it. And then we also have another interesting fight here. Omar Douglas, he's undefeated at 14-0, taking on a pretty big name in the Northeast. Frank Santos D'Alba, otherwise known as Frankie D'Alba.
I've seen Frankie fight a few times on some of the Travis Kaufman cards.
And
Tom, I think he fought on the card we went to.
Right. That name sounds familiar. Yeah.
And we got some other undercard action worth watching. Number one, our former guest, Heather Hardy. She's 13-0, so looking to shake that unlucky number off there and put a 14 there. She's fighting Renata Domsoti, who is 12-6. It's an 8-rounder. And then two undefeated fighters, Travis Peterkin, 15-0, fighting Lennon Castillo, who's 12-0. So somebody's got to go on that one. Bob Arum's got a card going on Saturday. He's got Chris Avalos fighting Ray Perez in Frisco, Texas, at the Dr. Pepper Arena. How'd you like to fight there?
Love it.
Chris Atlas is 25-3. Ray Perez is 20-6. Bob Arum, I guess Al Heyman didn't want to book the Dr. Pepper Arena.
Well, I would think once you get in the ring, it doesn't matter. You're going to be thinking about that where you're at. Better not be. Better be thinking about the guy across from you.
Oh, here's a tough fight. Yeah, this is crazy. Maybe you get this record. Now, this is Thief River Falls, Minnesota, at the Seven Clans Casino. This is a headliner. Van Goodman, okay? He's the headlining heavyweight. He's 4-5-2. That's his record. Guess who he's fighting? A guy named Marcus Rhode, R-H-O-D-E.
Oh, my God. I remember Marcus Rhode fighting Tommy Morrison.
His record is 35 wins, 51 losses, and
wow.
2 draws.
Wow.
Like I said, I remember Marcus Rhode, if I'm not mistaken, and we're going back almost 20 years here, when Tommy Morrison was first diagnosed with HIV, which was 1996, because I was a sophomore in college. So that we're right already looking at almost 20 years. And then like later that year, I think it was like late 96 or early 97, Morrison was doing a fight in China to raise money for AIDS and HIV awareness. And it was one of the fights that they had all these regulations on there. Like if there was any blood, they would like stop the fight immediately. And like they were doing the regulation here, regulation there, everything. And I'm pretty sure it was against Marcus Rhode, and Morrison knocked him out in like 30 seconds. Morrison never took a punch. You know, they couldn't find a safer opponent.
I don't know if it's a...
If you're looking at his record right now, go back to 96 and see if he has that loss to Tommy Morrison on there.
96. Jim Davis, Jerry Terry, Bud Jarman, James Powers. No, Jim Kaufman. Yeah, no Tommy Morrison on there. Oh, there it is.
What?
Tommy Morrison.
Told you.
In Tokyo.
Don't doubt the Rain Man.
Chiba, Japan. Chiba. There he is. Yeah, and he also fought a lot of our former guests, you know. See, who was the first one? Joey Abel. Talk to him.
What round did he get knocked out in that fight?
Joey Abel. That was 2009. It was the first round TKO. Let's see, Lou Severese, we didn't talk to him, but he fought him. Riddick Bowe, fought Riddick Bowe.
What round did he get knocked out in that fight?
Riddick Bowe was 40-1. He got TKO'd by Riddick Bowe in the second round. Let's see. Eric Esch, Butterbean. He fought Butterbean.
What round did he get knocked out in that fight?
Well, you know, it was before round four.
Yeah, right.
I haven't interviewed him, but Andrew Golota knocked him out in the third of TKO. Shannon Briggs TKO'd him in round one right after he ate his salad. No, that was different.
Of those 51 losses, how many have been by knockout?
51 losses?
Wow.
61 losses, 44 by knockout.
Boy, he better hope that concussion medication comes through. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Tom sent us concussion pill. I really didn't get a chance to read that article, but I will. Sounds like a good idea. It's a good concept.
Let's hope it becomes reality.
Anyway, that's Marcus Rhodes. Blasting the
44 knockouts. You know, you got to give the guy credit for tenacity, if nothing else. But you know, just wonder, wow, what? I mean, obviously he's going for the money, but you think there'd be an easier way. Wonder how much he'll make for this fight.
I do not know. That's a good question.
Because I'm thinking that obviously his star is set, and is he doing that much better than Burger King or you know, 7-Eleven convenience, or if he could even do that work? Knocked out 44 times. Wow.
Depends on how much money people lose at the casino that night, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got going on in Full Sail University, too, this weekend. Winter Park, Florida, that's another premier boxing champions event on Bounce TV. If you want to bounce, you go to Bounce TV. Never fucking heard of it, but you can watch it online. I think at BounceTV.com. They're going to stream it online live for free. From what I've read, we've been posting stuff on our blog about it. If you look at our blog, you'll see it, fightnewsunlimited.com. We got 35,000 visitors already, guys, plus.
Nice.
Limited.com. That little globe, little tool that never worked on our blog is working, tracking people from all over the freaking world. Islands in the middle of nowhere, China, Russia, Africa, you name it. We got people stopping by our blog.
Wow.
That's the power of WordPress, too, because you have the translator capabilities. So people just have their computer set wherever they are in the world. It just automatically translates. Pretty cool. But anyway, Bounce TV, main event, Udell Johnson. He's 17-1, fighting Jorge Cota at super welterweight. Cota is 24-1. And John Jackson's in the co-main event against Dennis Llorente. Jackson is 19-2. Llorente is 49-5-5. You know, when you get up past, you know, four draws, you've had a long career. Five draws for Dennis Llorente. And the titles on the line here are at bantamweight. Got a couple undefeated guys. Roche Warren. Guy who made Adrian Broner cry when he was a little kid.
Yeah.
He's 13-0 fighting Juan Carlos Payano. It's a great name for a boxer. You know, the last name begins with Pay. Pay me. Juan Carlos Payano. He's 16-0 for the WBA World Bantamweight title and the vacant International Boxing Organization World Bantamweight title. And, there's a guy whose name sounds like another guy's name, Joshua, not Claudia, but Conley, also on this card at Super Welterweight. He's 11-0-1, fighting Daquan Arnett, who's 13-1. That pretty much rounds out that card, but that's a really good card for free TV again. Boxing in Florida, in full effect. It's pretty good. That should be a good card to watch if you like watching the lighter weight guys. I'm super welterweight, bantamweight. That's the heaviest on the card, the super welterweight. Everybody else is lighter, the same. And then you get into Tuesday, Wednesday, all the shit going on in Japan that I'm not going to talk about. That's pretty much it. Marcus Rhodes. He's ranked 163 out of 326 heavyweights in the United States. You know.
Really?
Really.
Rich, what network is that fight on? No network, huh?
Possibly local access TV.
Okay.
You know, since you guys aren't on BoxRec, take a wild guess how many fights he's lost in a row.
through Marcus Road?
Yes.
17.
Oh.
I'll say 12.
Harsh. Whoa, that's still harsh. Four less, Tom. Four less. 17 down to 12. Now you got eight. Eight in a row. Guess who the last guy he beat? Guess how many losses that guy had.
132?
28 losses. I think he's related to Jack. His name is Jason Nicholson. Came in at 264 in Oklahoma. The unanimous decision win for Big Marcus Road there. But I think Tony's right. If that wasn't there, then he would have had 17 losses in a row. Beat a guy who was 4-4 before that. Then he beat a guy who was 1-13. That was a tough fight. Ron Johnson. He beat Ron Johnson at 210. That was 21-22 was Ron Johnson's record. Calvin Miller, tough guy. Beat him. He was 6-24 with one draw. Beat him twice. Wow. Andrew Galata. Andrew Galata in China. That's crazy. To be the guy who was 0-8. That's nice. John Warrior. How'd you like to be a guy whose nickname is John Warrior? You're a boxer. Your record is 0-8.
so many laughs in this grim business. So many laughs.
He fought Vitaly Klitschko, too, back in 98. Marcus Rowe TKO'd in the second. So, you know, he earned that. Whitaker. Funny, but bad. Man, this guy's record was built up like Peter McNeely's to fight off.
Peter McNeely liked one of my comments on Facebook a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. My sister actually went to Salem State University, and she told me Peter McNeely used to hang out at all the parties, and he was dating some girl from campus, and, you know, they had baby mama drama and all kinds of stuff going on. And her friends used to always joke, hey, what if we beat the shit out of Peter McNeely? You know, who cares if he fought back? You know, just to say we beat the shit out of him. No. She's like, no, yeah, that's probably not a good idea. Anyway. We got UFC to talk about, of course. We had another fantabulous card, free card this time. UFC on Fox 16, Dillashaw versus Barao 2. Did we really even need a rematch, Tom? Did we?
Yeah. I, you know, looking back on it, even knowing the outcome, I think Barao was entitled to this, but he just seemed like a man who was broken. And mentally, I didn't tumble onto it before because, you know, the way they do these build-ups and the road to the octagon shows and the countdowns, it teaches me a lot about how to market stuff. I mean, they are good, and I was expecting much more of an effort, but it just seemed like he was just a day late and a dollar short. And, you know, it's always bad when you've probably lost the first three rounds in your corner saying, fight, you got to fight. Well, yeah, duh, okay. That's never a good sign. And he just seemed beaten mentally. It was kind of, I mean, I like TJ. It's not like I really had a preference, but it was kind of painful to watch that. So now I guess he's going to have to move up to 145, but he's got his teammate there. So very big setback for Hennen, for sure.
He's in trouble, yeah. And, you know, we talked about this before with the pre-fight shows with Sean Porter and the little hypoxic machine that he had, you know. So I got my own machines. I'm using in my workouts. I got two high-level machines. Can you guess what they are?
Heavy bags?
No. They're actually electronic machines.
Ah, okay, well, let's share the wealth here with us.
I have something called a fan and something called a heater.
Oh.
machines that I use for my workout.
Old school.
John Porter had the room up over 100 degrees, you know, and the Bikram yoga stuff he was doing. Well, I'm hitting the bag at 110 some nights, so there. Well, I actually got down to 195 last week, just from mostly doing logging more than anything out there in the weather, but, you know, also jacking up the heat in there and hitting the bag. Not just doing yoga poses, you know.
Boy, Rich, you've exceeded your goal. I thought your plan was to get down to 205. Now we got you going down to 185. Okay.
Ricky, you got your college weight.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying.
There you go.
Want to get a rematch with Darren?
But anyway, Rain and Barrage, he didn't have any problems cutting weight this time. He got in there. He looked bigger. Looked a lot bigger, but he just couldn't get the striking together. He really just looked bad everywhere in this fight. I don't think defense would have helped him, but TJ's one big mistake was what Teddy Atlas always talks about, taking pictures.
Yeah.
When you land a good shot, you step back and you go, oh, that was nice, and then you get popped in the face.
Well, I kind of think that there was a psychological game there, too, that he just felt so superior, which is kind of silly. I mean, I would never want to see my fighter do that, but it just seemed like he was so sure of himself. He was so sure he couldn't be hurt, and he could get out of trouble and land anything he wanted, and he proved himself right, but those are kind of bad habits to get into.
Yeah, I mean, he does keep his hands up a lot when he's in tight, but when he gets into, you know, two or three steps away environment, he's always keeping one hand low. And sometimes he'll snap it up in time if a shot comes in, but other times he just leaves it there and does his work. And he, like I said in the article that I wrote about defense, that, you know, basically used him as the example as offense is the best defense.
Right.
He's throwing so many punches, sometimes he leaves himself open, but this time he was leaving himself open when he wasn't throwing punches, which against somebody who's a little bit more active with the striking could get him in trouble, but he didn't have much beyond, you know, a couple of head kick attempts and some body kicks here and there and some leg kicks. He really wasn't that great with his hands. Didn't throw any vicious elbows or knees that I saw that TJ had to worry about. And TJ was just throwing everything. It's just changing levels with no effort whatsoever. Something I've never seen even a boxer do. Just like seamless, you know? All of a sudden, okay, you're hitting the guy in the face. Now, boom, you're hitting him in the gut. Where did the level change come from? I didn't see it, you know?
Holy, you know, apparently, this has made me think about this, too, that apparently there's some real friction between Ludwig and the Team Alpha Male. And I kind of wonder just how they felt about TJ going back there and actually moving his camp back there. Found the dynamics of that were fairly interesting to me. Maybe it'll come out.
And TJ, another thing he did differently that I like to do, you know, he used just pinpoint striking and basic takedown defense to keep that fight on the feet. And, you know, goes into the fourth round and just takes 35 seconds to just explode with offense to end that fight. And Barao was protesting, but no, you got no case, buddy.
No, not at all. And there was a lot of talk that in a few of those fights, Herb Dean allowed them to go on maybe a little longer because he was feeling the criticism of the Mendez situation with McGregor.
And I'm not saying TJ was about to dispatch him, knock him out officially, you know, for the count, but it wasn't going to be good for Barao if they let him continue that round.
No, I thought that stoppage was great. I mean, maybe he could have stopped at a punch or two before, but, you know, it's a very tough job. Stuff's happening so quick. I think he was right on the money with it, and I'm not a quick stop guy.
It was the third round. I'm not sure if it was the second or third round. I think it was the third round, but there was an exchange where Barao tried to grab a hold of TJ around the waist, I think, and just throw him up against the cage, and then TJ just wrenched his arm and threw him back the other way. And, you know, you can see when they're that close to each other, how much smaller of a guy TJ is. But he's just a fucking bull.
You know, and one thing that kind of tinged the night is when Burrell came out and some classless idiot threw an American flag down in his direction. I mean, I we could have done without that.
Right.
I'm splitting here. Not sure, we'll keep it on the flight. But
it's for fighting Ronda Rousey again. Rousey's actually said she's interested in that fight, although I think we'll still see Cyborg fight catchweight first. But Misha Tate dispatched Jessica Eye. Well, didn't take her out, but got her unanimous decision. A pretty decent fight for her. She used a lot of weird boxing. Baby Chumanov
style.
I
had to be impressed with Misha's, her physicality. She was able to change because the first 3 minutes, I think we could agree that Jessica was lighting her up. I mean, nice boxing, but. You know, Tony, what's the first thing you learn when you pull back? The very first thing you're in a boxing gym, you know, and you see new guys do it all the time. What do they tell you not to do when you're pulling back?
Oh, we lost Tony. Uh-oh. Good thing you asked him a question, Tom.
But, it's just... To me, it was such a devastating defeat for Jess because just certain basics have to be down. And, you know, she was doing such a good job early on. And then that...
Hello.
Okay, Tom, now you can ask him.
Okay. Yeah, Tony, we were discussing the girl fight from last week with my hometown gal going against our former guest, Misha Tate. And when you're a boxing gym, what is the first thing you're told when you're coming out of a clinch, when you're pulling back? What are you told not to do that new guys do all the time?
What are we told not to do when you're pulling out of, like, being inside?
Right.
If you're like, oh, you're told not to step back with your hands down and your chin up.
Bingo. And also pulling straight back. Yeah, this is to give you a
recap. You don't pull straight back with your hands down and your chin up.
Right, exactly. And the way it was going... in the first round, Jessica was, after 3 minutes, I think everything was going her way. She had good, crisp combinations, stopping Misha's takedowns, our former guest, Misha Tate, as you know. And then all of a sudden, she got careless and pulled back, no head movement, her chin was way up in the air, and Misha caught her, mm-hmm. and that turned the whole thing around, so... This is quite a setback for Jess because she's been training for about 10 years. And, you know, I know it's hard in there that you can get caught up in a situation, but, you know, it just seems like, because I know that the boxing coach up at the gym, you know, we used to have the Giacanti brothers, but they left under not too good of circumstances, long story. But got a good boxing coach there that also has kind of moved things in an MMA direction because there are some differences, as we know about that. You know, in boxing, you don't worry about the kicks or the takedowns. But I know she was trained well, and I don't know if it was just a big mental mistake, but all it takes is one punch and it can turn a fight around, and I think that's what happened. So good for Misha. She'll get another chance.
Yeah, I liked Misha's style after the first round. The first round, I think she just was like, okay, you know, I'm going to try this little boxing method of, you know, put the carrot on the stick out there and see if she bites it, you know. She
right.
kept doing the distraction there with the left hand high. And then she took a couple punches to the face and realized, okay, I don't really need defense anymore. I can take
right.
the best shot that she has. So
yeah,
I'm just going to
yeah,
concentrate on my offensive boxing and striking when I can. And, you know, she got a hold of the wrestling, and that was the decision. You know, once she started dominating.
And I do have to think that she really made a good adjustment, and then she kept the flow going, and she just didn't let Jessica get back into it, and she imposed her will. So we'll see, though. The men on the underground really were not too thrilled about a third fight with Ronda. But I agree with what you say. Let Cyborg come over, and we'll try a catchweight at 140 and see how that goes. And Misha said she'd be up for it, and I'm sure Cyborg would be too. And that would be a fun one to watch, because I have to congratulate. I felt terrible for my hometown gal here, but got to salute Misha. It's a great fight for her.
Sure. We also had Edson Barboza won a close one over Paul Felder.
Philly boy.
Notice about this fight, of course, there was a lot of spinning going on. So, I mean, I'm a proponent of just regular back fists, but Paul likes the spinning back fists more than any other fighter, I think. And Edson was throwing spinning kicks, so it's like, you know, they literally spun at the same time at one point and missed each other. It was kind of hilarious when that happened. But, you know, this was a lot of close contact, battering each other in the face, not a lot of good defense. But the defense that I did see that impressed me was from Felder, actually. And, you know, think about a pinball table, right? You know, you've got just two flippers you're using to shoot that ball all over the damn table. And there's such limited movement there with a pinball flipper. And that's what Paul Felder's head reminded me of when he was ducking punches just by moving his head to the side. Mm-hmm. That little pinball flipper and that motion, just laying his head to the side. And you talk about narrow misses. He should have been knocked out about 7 or 8 times in that fight if it wasn't for that little bit of head movement. Instead of a direct hit, it was a glancing blow or a total miss altogether. It's just from a 45-degree head tilt. So that's one thing I picked up about that fight. He was pissed. You know, he had a tough fight. It was a hard fight, but he definitely did not score as many punches and you know, have as much command of the rounds, I think, as Edson did. It was close.
I would agree. I mean, that was a good decision, and I think Paul will learn a lot from it and be better.
But, yeah, that's a lesson for people on defense. It's not always the hands up that's everything. It's, you know, head movement is big, too. You can't last to the third round to get a decision, loss or win, if you're not moving your head like that in a fight like that. So then we had Joe Lauzon talking about taking on his hero, Takanori Gomo. Gomi, he didn't like it. He didn't want to, and he stopped the fight himself. Did you ever see that happen, Tony? Did you ever say this guy's had enough for the ref and go away?
What? Have I ever said that to the referee to stop a fight? No.
Well, that's basically what Joe did. He didn't say anything to the ref, but he beat up Takanori, you know, flash knockout for a second, Gomi was unconscious, and Joe just hopped off of him, and, you know, Herb Dean was about ready to be like, hey, get back there, and then all of a sudden he's like, okay, it's all done.
The only time I've ever done that, something similar to that, was a sparring session. And I was just really starting out. I was only 18 years old. I was training down in Philly, and Tom's going to get a kick out of this. Training down in Philly, and I would spar with 2 or 3 certain guys because they were a little bit older than me. A couple of them were very seasoned. And so they knew, you know, we would work hard. But at the same time, they knew how to control it. So, because I was such a young, rambunctious kid, but that way we were keeping it educational. And we were learning. We were working hard, but we were learning. We had one time I was in there with a guy about my own age, about my own size. And I had already competed for a year. I had 4 fights. But they were really trying to teach me the aspect of boxing. You know, not just going in there making everything a Pier 6 brawl. The aspect of boxing. And so I'm in there with this one kid, and he's trying to pick up the tempo, and the trainer kept telling him, Nate, knock it off. Nate, knock it off. And then finally, he just kind of nodded at me. He's like, do what you got to do, bro. And Nate threw another right hand. I countered with a left hook, and I hurt him pretty good. And instinct, I went to finish the show. And the trainer actually kind of jumped over like the apron, or he kind of embraced the fighter from the outside of the ring and was like, no, it's over. And this guy was busted up pretty good. Now, a month or so later, I'm in there with this guy named Kenny. If I was about 18, Kenny was about 40. Mm-hmm. He was more in there. He trained and he liked it and he had fun with it. And he liked being there with all the guys. These are guys who are friends of his. And Kenny was a great guy. I haven't seen him in about 10 years, but Kenny was a great guy. The problem with Kenny is Kenny would like to get in there with some of the guys and, you know, say he was sparring with, you know, one of the trainers. Next thing you know, he'd rip off a combination, you know, and really start picking the tempo up. And then be like, oh, I'm sorry. And then go back to light sparring again. Then he'd land a couple shots. Oh, sorry. So that night I was in a mood. They're putting me in there with Kenny. And I'm like, you know what? He ain't pulling the shit on me. I'm in a mood tonight for whatever reason. So I'm going to go lump his ass up. So I go in there. At first round, I crack him with a left hook. And I buckle him, you know. And then you could see he's like, oh, shit. Now I'm hitting him in the body. By the third round, he's out of gas, and I'm beating the hell out of him. And finally, at one point, he's got his mouth, he's leaning on the ropes, and he's got his mouthpiece hanging out. And I'm looking with the trainer, I'm like, yo, he's done. And the trainer's like, come on, Kenny, get your damn mouthpiece in. And I'm like, Kev, I think he's done. He's like, no. Can you get your damn mouthpiece in? And I'm like, Kev, I think he's done. He's like, no, finish the show. For whatever reason, Kevin was also pissed off at Kenny that night. Go finish the show. Well, I felt bad, and I didn't want to do it. So I went in, and I threw two body shots. And I hit him. It was like a right and a left of the body. And he actually, I guess he was expecting the headshots because he just totally wasn't prepared for the body shots. So I just remember him going, ugh! And he picked his knee all the way up to the fact like his knee was in his chest. And then he just kind of went down to a knee. And I kind of turned. I'm like, dude, Kev, you happy now? He's like, need that killer instinct, baby. I'm like, okay, you know, but that was the only time that I've ever said stop a fight.
Well, Joe stopped his own fight at the 237 mark of round one. Takanori Gomi did not look good. You know, they call him the fireball, but I think his fire is burnt out.
Well, I don't know what his... I know he was fighting back around 2001, I think he started. And he's been in some wars. I mean, especially in Pride. He didn't duck anyone. So maybe it's the cash registers just rung up and popped open for him. I mean, he just looked shot.
Well, in the United States, you know, and even when the UFC goes overseas, you know, they just, unless it's like a hometown guy on an undercard fight, they just never seem to do well at the higher levels. But anyway, Tom Lawler beat Gian Vellante by a beautiful knockout in the second round. Talk about coming
what
back.
What a comeback. Wow.
7 seconds. We go, the old 1-2, boom, you're gone. And then Jim Miller made a nice little split decision victory, looked good against Danny Castillo. Used a lot of his wrestling, a lot of jiu-jitsu action going on there. Ben Saunders beat Kenny Robertson, also by split decision. We had Misha's boyfriend, Brian Caraway, beat Eddie Wineland by unanimous decision.
Yeah,
Tom, you were talking about this.
Yeah.
I did not.
Well,
James Cross.
Yeah, go ahead. We'll get back to Eddie in a minute. But the point I was making to you about that, and I know Tony will agree, how often does anger help you in a fight?
Never.
Like, never. Never. And
you know
why?
I'm never going to say never on that. And,
well,
and
yeah,
here's why. Certain fighters do better when they're mad. Vinny Paz, perfect example. Vinny was a guy that, you know, the more fired up and more pissed off he was, the better he performed. That was him. He was a highly emotional fighter. You know, and I'm not saying like, that didn't lead him into mistakes sometimes or allow him to get ahead of himself in a fight or, you know, walk into a punch or something like that. But he was a fighter that did better when he was emotional. I know there have been times that I've gotten ahead of myself by being a little too fired up, but a perfect example, I know my freshman year, I was in a fight and I was against a senior from Penn State, and he was lumping me up pretty good in the first round. And the second round, he slipped the jab, and I think he did it on purpose, ran the top of his head into my face, and my nose just went, and blood started pouring. And I said to the referee, I'm like, yo, he just fucking butted me. And the ref said, no talking in the ring. And I saw red, not just from the blood, but I saw red, and I came out of there like a wild man, and I just started just, you know, I was fighting, you know, not a controlled fight, but I was overwhelming them. And it went to the cards. I didn't get the decision because I had dug myself in such an early hole. But in that third round, you would have definitely said, who was winning that fight? The guy that was pissed off.
Yeah, that is a good point, because I think that the key is if it happens during the fight. But this guy was so charged up coming in there. I mean, he was just burning his cardio, and he hadn't fought in 400 and some days. That didn't help either. But yeah, that's a good point with Vinny.
Well, yeah, like I said. I remember going to, when I went to the Vinny Paz Dana Rosenblatt fight, and uh-huh. Vinny came to the ring. I mean, he came to the ring. Like, he was frothing out of the mouth, because as Rich and I know, Vinny's personal feelings towards Mr. Rosenblatt, he ain't so dangerous no more. But he was like, I mean, just even if you look at that fight on YouTube, look at his face coming to the ring. I mean, he was a Tasmanian devil that night. I mean, he was just on fire. And even though he was losing, he got Rosenblatt out of his game because he mentally psyched him out. And then he knocked him out.
Right, yeah, that was a beautiful right hand, beautiful. And he didn't want to stop either. You know, Vinny was so charged up.
No, he did not.
The referee was, I remember that, he's still going. Sean O'Grady says, wow, it was Dana Rosenblatt tonight, not Rosenblatt. But, you know,
yeah.
Vinny was a force of nature. I mean, that was just his DNA. That's the way he fought. And fortunately for him, he usually had the cardio to pull it off. And I think that made a big difference.
True,
there.
True.
Because a lot of times...
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're so charged up, you can easily blow your wad quick. And I kind of was wondering if that would
absolutely.
Happen with Betty. But getting back on Vinny, he was the ever-ready bunny. I mean, the guy just was a force of nature.
Yeah. I'll tell you what was funny, and I asked Vinny this, you know, when we had him on the air a number of years ago. I got to go to two of his fights, and he always said I was like his good luck charm because he won both of them. These were both after he came back from the broken neck. When I was 16, my dad took me down. It was the undercard of the Vander Holyfield-Alex Stewart rematch, and Vinny fought Lloyd Hunnigan on that card. And Tony Orlando was the referee. And Vinny was beating the hell out of Lloyd Hunnigan the whole fight. I mean, kicking the shit out of him. And I'll never forget it, because it was in the front row were two guys that were there to support Vinny. One was his friend Andrew Dice Clay, and the other one was Captain Lou Albano. And Vinny's kicking the living crap out of Lloyd Hunnigan. And then finally, I think it was like the ninth or tenth round, I mean, you know, the fight was all but over, and they come out of the corner, and it's like, you know, Vinny starts tattooing him again. And all of a sudden, like, you can see the towel from Hunnigan's corner come in, and Vinny doesn't see it, and the referee sees it. Tony Orlando goes to step in to stop the fight, and as he does it, he gets in, and he kind of knocks Vinny over. Vinny falls, hits the second rope on the way down, and springboards himself up. And he comes up firing, you know, and he's knocking Hunnigan across the ring. Tony Orlando's trying to stop the fight. You know, he's almost knocking him out of the way. Next thing you know, here comes everybody charging in the ring, including Captain Lou Albano. Lou Albano comes up, runs a circle around, and then he throws himself over the top rope. And I'm in the cheap seat to my dad. I'm like, what the hell was that? You know, and we laughed at it, and Vinny laughed about it. And then I said, now, Vinny, let's go to this. I said, Tony Orlando's the referee. Italian guy, right?
Yeah.
I said, when you fight Dana Rosenblatt and you have him down, you have him hurt, Tony Orlando's the referee, and he goes to stop the fight, you push him out of the way and you damn near knock him over trying to beat the hell out of Rosenblatt some more. So what the hell do you got against what do you got against your fellow Paisan, Tony Orlando? And he landed, I didn't even realize he was the referee in both of those fights. I just remember the Rosenblatt fight pushing him like, get the hell out of the way, I still want to hit him a few more times.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's just, you know, Vinny was kind of like the Ken Shamrock of boxing in his time. I mean, all these feuds.
Yeah.
He always had feuds. I remember, like, you remember the Greg Haugen thing. I don't know what set that off, but
yeah.
that was kind of my first introduction to Vinny. And I think I was back 86 or 87. No, 87. Yeah, when they started their battles. And, boy, there was just always, Vinny just had that personality. He's the kind of guy, you love him or hate him. There's no in between. I get the feeling if people knew him more than superficially, it would usually be that way, because he could, one of those guys, be your best friend or your worst enemy.
Yeah, and I remember this, because, like I said, I remember watching Vinny fights with my dad. This is before, you know, you had the Haugen fights. Because, you know, my dad, obviously, you know, Italian kid coming up, my dad, you know, watching him, so I'm watching him with my dad, and I remember the one fight, and it was a Spanish kid he was fighting, and Vinny, and it was like on like ABC, or like Wide World of Sports, or CBS, or one of the network channels, Saturday afternoon, and I remember he stopped the guy with like 5 seconds to go in the last round, but he was just so highly energetic, and, you know, that's how I became, you know, a fan of his. And then with obviously with the Haugen fights and all that. So like I said, and then when he had the fights with Gilbert Delay to win the title, then he broke his neck, and then just coming back from that just made me even a bigger fan. But he was a guy. You're right. It's like, you know, if you were behind him, it's like, you know, you had a guy that was going to, you know, give you balls to the wall every time. But you could see why people might not like him just because he was just his personality. He was like a perfect nickname. He was literally a Tasmanian devil. Just he was a Tasmanian devil. But that's what he was, you know, because he just brought that high intensity. He was in your face. He had no problem, you know, speaking his mind. And if it was trash talk, it was trash talk. He didn't care. And that's what, like I said, made the fans love him or hate him. Now, what was funny, speaking about Greg Haugen, those two still verbally mouth off to each other. And I know that just because I'm Facebook friends with Vinny. And, you know, I've been Facebook friends with him a couple of years. And I remember the one time he wrote something on Facebook. He posted something about something. I don't know what it was. But apparently, and I don't know if they still are, but him and Greg Haugen were Facebook friends on there. And Haugen said, oh, you know, I think it was something like Vinny was getting engaged or something. I think he's been engaged about like 12 times. And I don't think he's married yet. But, but he would say something about being engaged or whatever. And Haugen said something. And I thought, now maybe they have a joking relationship now. Like Rich put something on there and I might bust his balls on there. And someone could think maybe because we had a rivalry back in college. Oh, maybe they're still verbally jousting, you know, so many years later, and those college rivalry never died down, which is, you know, obviously we're just joking around. But Haugen wrote something like, oh, it's about time you got married and popped out some of them Guido babies or whatever. And I'm like, okay, that sounds like, and Haugen always had that reputation of kind of being like a smart ass, kind of like a jerk, you know, never really like a fan friendly person. So, of course, knowing that about him, I'm like, boy, that's really a dick thing to say. And then Paz comes back and he's like, hey, Haugen, like Howgen. He purposely spelled his name wrong. And he goes, hey, 2 out of 3, baby. Beat you 2 out of 3. Don't ever forget that. But it was like, I was like, that just reading that almost made me just a little bit uncomfortable. But that was, Haugen was very much like that. I remember them even reading in Ray Mancini's book, and it was, whoever Ray's friend or whoever wrote the book was even saying, when Mancini was coming out of retirement to fight Haugen, and, you know, he was the one that, you know, obviously all the hoopla was about. This is Ray Boom Boom Mancini. This is the guy that, you know, was a matinee idol. And he goes, they're having this press conference, and he goes, everybody wants to talk to Boom Boom. He goes, Haugen's sitting there, and he goes, they look like he may just, like, you know, and the guy's words were like, they look like he's walked out of the trailer park, and he's sitting there seething. I mean, just seething, just like, just angry. And when he was beating Mancini, he was really, like, taunting him, you know, and he was really, you know, trying to humiliate him out there. And I think that's kind of why, like, Haugen was never a big fan-friendly person. I remember him going to fight Julio Cesar Chavez down in Mexico, and he's like, I'm walking out there after he fought all these Tijuana taxi drivers. I'm coming out to Born in the USA, and I'm wearing the American flag, and I'm going to do this and that. He incensed the wrong person. Because that beating Chavez gave him was not funny.
Yeah.
If you're the ranger boxing, then Haugen is the John Rocker. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Tony, that's interesting about him making the wrong person mad. Maybe he made 120,000 of the wrong people mad. If I remember right, that was the biggest stadium in Mexico City. And they had a ton of people there. You got to give Haugen credit for a couple big cojones, big stones, you know. Or it's just a screw loose, but I mean, I'm thinking in that kind of atmosphere, if there's a riot there, I mean, that could have really spun out of control. Because the Mexican people are they're very passionate people about their fight. And that's great. I mean, I like that. I think all people should support their guys.
Donald Trump says some of them are good people, right? Some of the Mexicans.
Well, you know, that all I'm saying is that could have spun very quickly out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's tough enough going in to fight a legend in the first place. Why pour gasoline on the fire? So Haugen did have that screw loose. So, yeah, that was fascinating.
Hey, sorry to switch gears on you guys, but Donald Trump's in the news a lot lately. And I was just thinking the other day, you know who a perfect running mate for him would be?
I was going to say, like, Marco Rubio, who's, like, Mexican?
Dana White. Get him out of
there. That
would be great.
Dana would take a pay cut for that. And I don't think he's quite at Trump's billionaire stat. Trump can afford a pay cut. I'm sure Dana's loaded, but, you know, I don't think he's quite there yet. But, yeah, that would be interesting. Definitely be interesting.
Ronda Rousey fighting Betch Correa this weekend in her home venue in Brazil.
Is that the Battle of the Undefeated?
Battle of the Undefeated. Betch is 9-0. Yeah. Speaking of angry fights, she said some personal shit about Honda Housey. She's Brazil. That's how you.
Yeah, I know about this fight. I know it's the Battle of the Undefeated because that promo on WWE Raw.
There you go. And big co-main event fight here. A couple of legends here. Mauricio Hua versus Antonio Rogério Nogueira. Hua is 22-10. Nogueira is 21-6. Long time fighting both of those guys.
Yeah, they're
in Brazil too. Rio, Brazil.
Yeah, for sure. Their first fight was great, but the question with Shogun, especially, is how many wars that guy's been through, and for that matter, Little Nog. I mean, it's not like he's a new kid on the block either. So I don't know. I think it could be either really good or really bad, because if they both deteriorated to a certain level, you know, they're still going to be giving everything they've got for their home country fans. But what do they have left?
I think they both fight a little like they've been to the Cain Velasquez Junior Dos Santos School of Boxing.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Protecting their heads and just swing like there's no tomorrow.
Well, I mean, in Pride, Shogun took his share of beatings. And then after the John Jones fight, a normal human being would have retired. Instead, he comes back and has a worse war with Dan Henderson. and he's still going, but I mean, there's been times he's just looked terrible. So I don't know. I don't know what the odds are for this one, but I'd have to think that maybe Little Nog might have the edge. And I don't think that would have happened, you know, even 5 years ago. But we'll see if he can pull something out.
A couple other Brazilians here. Looks like Fernando Bruno, 15-2, fighting Glyco Franca Moreira, who's 12-3. I don't know anything about either of those guys. Delano Lopes, he's 18-1, fighting Reginaldo Vieira, 12-3. The other Nogueira is also on the card. Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, he's 34-9-1, fighting Stefan Struve, who hasn't really had his comeback fight from his heart issues there and passed out before he could have his last fight, literally in the locker room, passed out. He's 25-7 coming into this one, so we'll see how that goes down in Brazil. We also have Antonio Silva coming in after getting the shit kicked out of him not too long ago. He's 18-7-1 fighting Soa the Hulk Palele, who's 22-4. And a very interesting female fight way down here in the middle of the card. Jessica Aguilar, 19-4, fighting Claudia Gadella, who's 12-1. And Gadella had a bloody entrance into the UFC. Let's see how Jessica does here. We got Demian Maia also on the card. He's 20-6. Neil Magny is his opponent, 15-3. Rafael Cavalcante, 12-5, fighting Patrick Cummins. Warley Alves, 8-0, fighting Nordine Taleb, who's 11-2. Yuri Alcantara, 31-6, fighting Leandro Issa, who's 13-4. Vitor Miranda, 10-4, fighting Clint Hester, who's 11-4. And Hugo Biana, 8-2, fighting Guido. Speaking of Guidos, Tony. Guido Canetti, 6-2.
My people.
The big one here is the main event, Ronda versus Betch. Everybody wants to know, you know, here's Betch, got every reason in the world to pull off the upset in front of her home crowd. But can she do it? You know, the big strength she has is on the feet, I think, with the one and the two, the left and the right. Can she break Ronda's jaw? That's basically the advice she's been given. Go break Ronda's jaw. So can she do it? I don't think so. But Rousey might have a tough time getting that big, strong arm into an arm bar. Bet she's a pretty stocky woman. I was going to say something else.
Well, you know, Rich, I don't know if you caught the countdown, but Ronda said she's going to carry this because I guess there was something about Ronda's father committing suicide, and Beth had apparently read the book, but she denied knowledge of it when she said, I hope Ronda doesn't kill herself after I beat her. And Ronda took that highly personal, and that apologized in one sense, but the apology was kind of half-hearted in Ronda's standpoint. And, you know, it gets back to that old saw for me that families are off limits. Be careful about that.
I agree with you.
Ronda said it's going to, when she bites Betch Kohea, she's going to take longer.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it may be one of those what's my name fights like with Ollie and Ernie Terrell or Ollie and Floyd Patterson. Mm-hmm. It may be one of those things. And those are very, very ugly fights. I mean, if Ronda can really get to the point where you know she could finish it but won't do it, that's probably the cruelest thing you can do to someone. So we'll see what happens. Beth is very confident, so she's only a plus 750. So she's like a 7.5-1 underdog. I thought this would be more like in the Buster Douglas Mike Tyson range, but I was wrong.
Interesting. We also have a World Series of Fighting event this weekend with the main event of Jake Shields versus Husmar Palhares.
Fascinating.
Thiago Silva was also supposed to be on this card, but he had some license issues. I think they found out that he's kind of a domestic terrorist. No. they were talking about domestic violence in MMA on HBO. think we mentioned that there was a story on that a couple weeks ago, but somehow they forgot to mention Tiago chasing his wife around with a gun. Anyway, Tiago is still going to fight, I guess, for World Series of Fighting, but had some kind of problem with his fight license for some reason. And if SureDog will load, I will tell you what else is on that card. But while we're waiting for that, I sent you a link, Tom, about Wanderlei Silva claiming there were fixed fights in the UFC. Remember that?
Right. And now, from what I understand, they're suing him over that.
Yes, Zuffa is officially suing Wanderlei Silva, their own fighter. They still, apparently, according to Silva, have not separated his contract from the organization. They still haven't fired him officially. But they're suing him for disparagement and defamation for saying he has proof of fixed fights. And this was another Stitch thing. Stitch, you know. Did you see the river of blood that was coming out of the cage the other night because Stitch wasn't there?
Yeah. I definitely know you were. And very perceptive on your part. And it was brought up on the Underground a few times, too, that Stitch was, how many years has Stitch been in boxing? Forever. And
he was handling Babe Boot. They let him out of the UFC so he could handle Babe Boot. That was the thing, I guess. Babe Boot looked good. He got a little cut over his eye, but Stitch took care of him. No, but actually, Wanderlei Silva claims his, you know, whole thing, he had a picture of Stitch attached to it, so that was like his last straw, was them fucking with Stitch. And, you know, obviously he was already pissed about the Reebok deal and Jose Aldo being his buddy from Brazil. So he came out and he said that he can prove the UFC's fixed fights, and they sued him for at least $10,000, legal fees, all that shit, and we'll see what happens. But they've got a case, I guess, if he doesn't come out and prove it. I mean, that's the defense for defamation is prove it's true.
Yeah.
So now he's got a choice. Now you can't just sit on it anymore. You got to prove it if you have it. You got the proof. We need to see it, buddy. So that's in the news. Kennedy Golovkin, I don't know if we talked about this last week, but he's got a new opponent, David Lemieux.
That'd be a good fight. I don't know if Lemieux's got the chin to stand up to him, but that'll be a good fight. It'll be good offensive.
Hopefully. And they're talking about this being sort of a tournament deal, whereas the winner of this one would face the winner of Cotto versus Alvarez. Unofficial tournament. Oh, boy, let's go, computer. Stop being so slow.
Mine, too.
Tom's article is hanging me up here. It's a concussion pill article. Sucking up a lot of my REM.
Okay, sorry.
Let's see. What else we got? Big news. Big news. Who's got big news? Oh, USA Today. Talking about Dana White and Donald Trump being business partners. No. Running mate. USA Today this week, because of the Stitch thing, actually last week, they wrote an article highlighting how Dana went after the fans who were complaining about Stitch and Reebok altogether. And they, UFC actually pays USA Today for coverage, pays them to cover the sport and themselves in the UFC. And USA Today does a front page thing, basically, on their sports section, blasting Dana White for eviscerating his fans. And you know how Dana White does it. You know, he's not like, oh, well, you know, I had to fire Stitch or anything. He comes back to all the insults with, oh, you know, nice profile picture, somebody says make it right or leave the UFC, you know, he goes, oh, you know, or fire me, not Stitch, somebody said, and he goes, oh, I don't own McDonald's, so I can't fire you. It's funny, but it's juvenile, and it's like, you know, he doesn't actually address the accusation or the insult, you know, it's just like shooting at something else, you know? It's just unbelievable. It's like, reminded me of that, the Rock sketch on Saturday Night Live where you're doing the wrestling promo and he's like, well, you have herpes. What does that have to do with wrestling? Oh, no. Anyway, yeah, so that's another thing in the news. And we got World Series of Fighting, Rusamar Paul Juarez versus Jake Shields. I think that's on Sunday. Or no, they're actually going up against the UFC on Saturday night. Rusamar is 17-6. Jake Shields is 31-7-1. We've got Marlon Moraes. He's 14-4-1 fighting Shaymon Da Silva Moraes. Two Moraes in the same fight. How the hell are you going to freaking score this one? Shaymon versus Marlon. Moraes, both last names spelled exactly the same. And we've got Mike Kyle on the card. He's 21-12-1 fighting Clifford Starks. That's the fighter stepping in for Thiago Silva. Clifford is 11-2. He's not a big red dog. He's a fighter. Abu Bakr Nurmagomedov, who is related to Khabib. He is 9-1. He's fighting Jorge Moreno on this card. He's 4-0. We've got Islam Mamedov, who is 11-1, fighting Jimmy Spokuza. Jake Kuhn also on the card. He's 7-4, fighting Davin Clark, who's 5-2. Donovan Freeba, 4-0, fighting Carlos Garcia, who's 0-0. Let's see what else we got. We've got Jimmy Jones, 4-3, fighting 0-0, Marco Lopez Simmons. Corey Hendricks, 1-0, fighting Julio Hinojosa, who's 3-1, and Gil Guardado fighting Pete Martin. Guardado's 3-1, Martin is 5-3. Tito Ortiz also flapping his jaws this week about okay, you're connecting us. I don't know what I was last heard saying. I was just caught talking to myself there for a minute. It's fun, especially when you're going on a rant. You're like, oh, yeah, nobody's listening. Cool. Anyway, I'm waiting for my email to load. Basically, I was talking about, I think, before or right around the time we disconnected, Tito Ortiz came out and said the UFC is crumbling from within, like the Roman Empire, and was criticizing a lot of the way the Reebok deal went down. Stitch, obviously, is another sore subject for him. The other thing was Dana White came out, and his excuse for Stitch going out there and saying that, I wish Dana White had been the one to handle it, you know, because he's the one who brought me in, and, you know, I thought he was a friend of mine, and, you know, most CEOs would handle that a little bit differently. You know, even Donald Trump might have some sensitivity on that one. But Dana comes in and he goes, well, Stitch was never even my friend. I don't know what the hell that guy's talking about. He needs to look up friend in the dictionary because we weren't friends. I don't deal with cutmen. We have a department for that. He says, I'm only friends with one cutman. And that's it. And it wasn't Stitch, I guess. So that was in the news. Let's see. That's pretty much it. As I mentioned, we were trying to get Brandon Bennett on the broadcast. We could not get him tonight. He's 19-1 with 8 knockout wins. He will face Jonathan Maicello on Friday, August 28th. We'll try to get him next week, or Maicello, or both of them. My rest of my notes aren't loading, so if I had anything else, well, I'm not getting to it. But thankfully, we got the show in today, even though Box Blog Talk thought they were busy.
Yeah, Blog Talk Radio is being a pain in the rear end.
They thought they were too busy for us tonight, but we've got around it. So until next week, that's all for us. Big fights. Go Rousey. I'm going to be rooting for Paulie, you know, because he's a jab guy. I'm a jab guy, but I think Danny's going to win that one.
I got it. I'm, you know, I always like my Philly boys. But I also like my Italian fighters as well. But this one here, my head says Danny is going to win this one decision. It's not going to be a blowout. It's going to be a competitive fight. But I'm saying it's not going to be a blowout. But a lot of it depends on how comfortable Paulie's gotten behind that announce table.
Right.
Because he's gotten, you know, too comfortable back there. Maybe he doesn't have that, you know, fighting skill anymore, you know, that can turn things on you real quick.
All right, let's just hope it's a good show. We got 2 days of boxing again. If you like Bounce TV, I don't even know. I think I have it on my cable network. But, you know, if you can watch boxing Saturday and Sunday, and it's for free, because you can watch it online at bouncetv.com. It's going to be a good weekend for boxing, and also you got UFC and World Series of Fighting doing dueling events, so we'll have plenty to talk about next week for sure. And definitely a guest from the boxing world to check.
Okay.
All right, that's all for us, folks. Thanks for stopping by and listening.
Gentlemen, as always, have a good weekend.
You tune in.
Yeah.